Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to this breakdown edition of another very frustrating Golden Gopher Big Ten loss, a 17-10 loss for the Floyd of Rosedale. A lot to get into, and I'm very, very happy to announce that cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman as well, Derek Burns, is back. To help us break down a Minnesota close loss again. Again, I know people are getting sick of close losses just like I am. It's like everybody is. You know, these whole silver linings and moral victories can only go so far. So, Derek, it's a very, very big pleasure for us to have you back on the podcast. How was Canada?
it was great, as you could imagine, cold. But it's cold here, too, so... I'm glad to be back, and I appreciate you guys having me back.
All right, Derek, we enjoy having you every time, but I think this time especially more than any given. I think there are just some head scratchers from this game just initially. I the Twitter sphere was a buzz. You know, why are the Gophers throwing so much? But I think before we get into that, I think the thing that Ryan needs to address probably is the Twitter outbreak on a quarterback that was committed or is committed or might be committed. I don't even really know. I don't understand soft versus hard verbals. I don't know.
It's something. So yeah, it's been a crazy day for us here at Minnesota 24/7 between Kyle and I. I got a couple of phone calls this morning from sources alerting me to what was going on. And, you know, we were told that Armstrong was going to be the one to announce it. And then it comes out that, you know, that's not the way it goes down. And then Brennan tells us he's still committed, but he's looking at other schools. So, Kyle and I have been trying to get into it as much as we can here on Gopher Illustrated tonight about the whole Brennan Armstrong situation. And again, we go into much greater detail on GI. So if you want to head on over there, you know, all your questions you have, I think we've basically answered here. But the thing we keep coming back to is it's a very complicated situation right now. Now, is it ideal that, you know, we're 7 weeks before the first signing day and Minnesota doesn't have a quarterback committed? I mean, depending on who you ask, with Brennan Armstrong still saying he's committed, but looking at other schools, but we here at GI hearing that he's not committed, for Minnesota sources, it's a very complicated deal right now. There's just a lot of different things going into it. Things such as Ohio State poking their head around, but I don't think that interest is legitimate. I think Ohio State is playing mind games with him to get to another kid. There is the Brennan Armstrong situation where he was suspended earlier in the season for off the field conduct. There's a multitude of different other things going into play right now. So Minnesota did offer a junior college quarterback tonight, a former Michigan commit, former Cal Bears enrollee. out of junior college. So there's a lot of different things going on in quarterback recruiting. So if you are as confused as most of the people on the Twitter machine are, you know, Kyle and I have done a great job over at GI about answering all your questions. We have names, we have film. I know even within the last hour, I just hung up with another Minnesota source about all of this. So, you know, I'd like to think we have the latest and greatest information to cover what's going on. So if you want to hear more, go head on over to GI. As again, there's a lot of different things to get into about the decision, but it's a complicated deal. That's for sure. So, Derek, to get back to the Iowa breakdown, I was one of the people that, you know, were kind of emotional in terms of a snap response. And, you know, that's not great of me as a media member to say, but, you know, I can admit a mistake. And, you know, when I went back and I watched the Minnesota film on offense this morning, I agreed with your takes from Sunday night. And if you want to see what Derek's takes are, you can follow him at Derek_S_Burns. That's Derek with a K. At the end of it as well. And Derek mentioned how he understood the game plan. It, you know, it wasn't as dumpster fiery as everybody made it out to be. And I agree. You know, it was to watch it live. It was a bit frustrating just because Minnesota wasn't having any success, Derek. But I mean, you go back and you watch the film, you see what Minnesota was trying to do. You see what Kirk Ciarrocca was trying to do. Now, did Demery Croft get any help from his receivers? The Big Ten officials for letting the Iowa Hawkeye defensive backs get away with basically murder on the field without a flag. You know, he had a lot of issues with his receivers creating separation. But what did you think of Kirk Ciarrocca's game plan, even though the execution from the Minnesota players and the Big Ten officials wasn't there?
Well, I think that the Gophers on offense wanted to put in more of the run pass option in this game as they add more to the offense and kind of open up the playbook a little bit. And I don't think they were going to be comfortable running a lot of drop back passing against Iowa. Iowa's not a team that blitzes. So they tend to put a lot of guys in coverage, which makes it difficult, especially if they're in zone. But I think their game plan to begin the game was to line up and run looks and provide a lot of play action to give those run pass option looks. And Iowa started the game running some man-to-man, and as you mentioned, the reads were there. I think the game plan was solid. Many times, Iowa lined up with two safeties, but on run action, they committed one of those safeties into the box to stop the run. So your pass option off of that play is to throw behind that safety, which Minnesota did at least a handful of times. And as you mentioned, they just couldn't execute on it. So again, I don't know that it was their plan to come out and throw, you know, a heavy percentage, but given what Iowa was doing, they felt they had some options there in the passing game to throw on play action. And so you look at that first half, many times, you know, they did run some inside and outside running plays, but off of that play action, Iowa's, you know, crashing one of those safeties and they were running a post or a skinny post or something behind it. And, you know, in single coverage, it was isolated and many times it was there. And they just couldn't connect either a drop pass. The pass was, you know, slightly overthrown, kind of one thing or another, and just weren't able to get momentum. As the game went on, Iowa did, you know, in the second half, they ended up with a 2-score lead for a while. They did fall back and ran a lot of straight zone. Minnesota had to do more drop back passing, which I don't think they wanted to do. And you saw it was very difficult to get anybody open. You know, Iowa likes to drop 6-7 guys into coverage in that zone and just literally blanket the field. And, you know, Minnesota was forced by the end of the game to run basically corner routes and bootleg floods, you know, to try and flood the zone to one side and find somebody open or run corner routes. And they really didn't find much on the floods. And they did end up connecting on at least one of the corner routes ended up being the explosive play for Johnson in the second half. They finally found it towards the end, but it was a struggle for him all day in the passing game.
All right, so you look at like Croft's stat line. He was 9 for 29, 139 yards, you know, one interception. And you know, to Ryan's point, you know, he didn't get a lot of help from the receivers, nor did he get a ton of help from the officials. But what I'm curious, you know, here in his second start, What did you think in terms of him making like any progression in terms of reads, right? So, you know, obviously there's the first primary read, but if that's not there, you move off. You know, what did you see Derek in terms of maybe his maturation as a quarterback?
Yeah, I think he looks like a quarterback that needs, you know, stating the obvious, but needs more experience. I think the coaching staff made a concerted effort in this game to narrow his reads down. So on a lot of those bootleg plays, you get him out of the pocket. That's usually a two look read. So they're usually reading like two levels. You're not always having to scan the whole field and read three, four different receivers. I kind of worked against them at times, you know, when they ran play action or ran boot and Iowa dropped seven guys into coverage and you only have two guys out on routes. It makes for an easy read, but a lot of times nobody's open. So I think they're trying to slow it down for him a little bit. I would say where he's done better is, as I mentioned, in that play action, throwing off of play action and the run pass option. And then the explosive game we mentioned on the corner route, he did a really nice job on that play of looking off the safety. So Iowa was playing with the safety in the middle of the field. He opens up, looks to his right, keeps his eyes downfield to the right, forces the safety to come in on the deep pattern, and then turns back on that corner route as a post corner. So it was a double move. It gave the receiver time to run the double move and get him in single coverage. Lastly, I would say the staff made a big effort to try and isolate Tyler Johnson in single coverage. So many times they're splitting him out opposite twins or trips receivers, trying to force the safety to commit to one side. And again, if they were in two safeties, that safety on the split side is coming up on play action to try and isolate Johnson. And again, they were able to do that, but they just weren't able to convert on many of those. And a few of them, but not enough. You know, again, too many drops, too many, you know, passes, just not right on the money.
Yeah, he didn't get any help. And again, you have to tell me how poor the stat line has been looking for Demery Croft here of late. A 9 of 29 performance for 139 yards and a pick. I believe his stat line through two starts now is somewhere around a 30-33% completion percentage with three interceptions and a touchdown, averaging, I think, 92 yards a game. It's not great, folks. And, it's just the state of where Minnesota's quarterbacks are at because of Tracy Clays and Jerry Kill. And, I've talked about for quite some time how Demery's the best option that Minnesota has, and I still believe that. But you're just not seeing the results. And so you look at that 9 of 29 performance, and I believe I counted five drops for Minnesota. So, I mean, you say those are caught. We're talking at a 50% completion percentage. And I think he had four throwaways from what I marked down as well. So you're looking at about 60% adjusted completion percentage when you take out drops and throwaways, which, you know, it's better. I mean, that's where you want to be. But nine completed passes on the day isn't where you want to be, especially for Tyler Johnson, and he only catches four of them. And I believe he had 13 targets. So four receptions on 13 targets isn't great. And I think the thing I keep coming back to with this whole quarterback deal, because I've also seen people in Gopher Illustrated and in my Twitter mention saying, let's go back to Rota or make it another two quarterback system. Let's not. Yeah, let's not do that. Connor Rota doesn't give Minnesota anything more in the passing game, and he actually makes the running game worse, because when you look at the sample size in terms of Demery Croft's two starts and Connor Rota's two starts, Minnesota is averaging 5.8 yards per carry with their running backs in Demery Croft's two starts, and with Connor Rota in his three Big Ten starts, and I'm taking out the non-conference because, you know, not a great amount of competition there. So I'm only looking at a Big Ten sample size, which, again, 3-2 games isn't very big. But with Connor Rota, it was 4.1 yards per carry with the running backs. So the running backs are averaging another yard and over a half better with Demery Croft back there just because he's mobile. And as Derek, I think, is, you know, I want to ask you about is, Minnesota has been running different blocking schemes, different plays. And one specifically that you brought up to me before I watched the film back was that introduction of the toss play again. Now, it's not necessarily a toss play as you think about it right now. If I think about a toss play, I'm thinking of probably 22 personnel. So you have two tight ends and a fullback, and you're throwing a toss out to the side. Well, Minnesota's got a variation of it. where they have, they're in shotgun, and it's kind of just like a glorified, it's not even like a traditional toss of sorts. It's kind of a pitch out, but the tight end's able to get out into space, and you either have another tight end out there to arc block, or you have two wide receivers out there. And I believe Minnesota ran it 5 or 6 times against the Hawkeyes, and outside of one play where a missed block resulted in a tackle for loss, Minnesota got 6 or 7 or 8-plus yards on each one of those. So, I mean, what have you seen now with two starts of Demaryius Croft, Derek, that Minnesota is doing different in terms of their blocking schemes? And do you agree with me that while the passing game results haven't been there with Demaryius Croft, the running game certainly looks improved with just the threat of a mobile quarterback?
Yeah, I agree. They have put in a couple things. They've been more apt to run out of multiple personnel sets. When they had Connor Rota quarterback, they like to run out of a two tight end or 7 blocker look, which limited things a bit in the passing game, and also limited some of the options in the running game out of those sets. They're more apt to run out of a 6 blocker or 5 blocker, which is 3 or 4 wide receiver sets, which again opens up the playbook a little bit. So that's been one difference. The other big difference is they've started to add layers and add additional plays to the running game. So if you could remember back earlier in the year, you know, most of us were frustrated. They ran inside zone, and I think that was, you know, at least early on in the season, that was about it. You know, they didn't run much outside of that. Then they added in an outside zone, and then in the last couple games, they've added a couple more wrinkles, as you mentioned. They've got the toss misdirection play, so they started running more outside zone, and the counter to that is to run in this direction, either handoff or a toss. So if the quarterback's in the shotgun and the running back is set to his right, they have the option of the quarterback keeping the ball and running a pin and pull outside run to the left. So they've added that with Croft. Or they can pull those blockers to the left and then toss or pitch the ball to the right, which is the play you're mentioning, Ryan, opposite the blocking as a misdirection, which kind of sucks in the defense to defend the outside zone the opposite way, gets those linebackers committed, which then gives you leverage for that tight end to come out and block and those wide receivers to down block. And you know, Minnesota has the skill that they have the running backs to be able to execute those. You know, jet was something they added in order to get those running backs out in the flat and outside the tackles, and forces the defense to defend the whole field laterally. So they've added outside zone. They've added the misdirection handoff. They've added the misdirection toss. They've been more apt to run, you know, mixing in more jet sweep. And then they've also added the outside dump pass to the running back out of the backfield as well. So I do think they're adding levels. They're adding, which is good to see, because it forces the defense to defend more of the field, and it gets your skill positions open, gets them the ball in space. And, you know, obviously what you want is your best players on offense to be in space and force those guys to have to make open field tackles against them. So I think Croft has allowed for definitely more versatility in the running game.
Derek, after the Michigan State game, we were kind of singing the praises of Coach Simon and basically the ability of the wide receivers to get separation, even when they're maybe down to wide receiver 5 or 6 with like Mark Williams. But, you know, the last 2 weeks, quite frankly, they haven't been able to get separation. Is this just an adjustment that other teams are making to kind of combat the Gophers? Or alternatively, you know, was the Michigan State game a little bit of an anomaly?
Well, I think that there has been an adjustment. The last two teams that they've played have run more zone in the middle of the field with the linebackers. And I think Minnesota had early success, if you remember us talking about it. Their schemes they were using and the route trees they were using were designed so that the early inside routes got downfield, forced the safety to commit, and then they'd run those deep crossing patterns from the outside or split receivers, which are basically in single-man coverage. But what Illinois did and then subsequently Iowa does, and this is what Iowa likes to do, is they run zone in the middle of the field, and when those running backs read pass, even if it's play action late, they get deep drops with those linebackers in the middle of the field, and that helps defend those crossing patterns. So you know, for whatever the defense does, there's always a counter to that. But they're trying to take away those deep crosses. And again, playing just full zone like Iowa did in the second half of the game, that scheme doesn't work well with that. You have to sit and find the soft spots in the zone. It's a different scheme, different route tree. You got to break your routes off. So that's what the teams that I've seen anyway in the last couple of games have done to defend that. And as you mentioned, they're not getting separation. So they have to come back and they have to do better at things like corner routes, out routes. They have to, if they want to run those crosses, and you could see this actually a couple times in the Iowa game, those crosses are going to be open at the end of the play as opposed to the middle of the field. So you watch a couple times, they ran those crosses, and if they were man on the outside, as they cross the middle of the field, there's nothing open because the linebackers are dropped. But then at the end of the play, as they break outside, they're open late. And so you just have to be patient and wait for them. So it's been an adjustment, and it has been frustrating. There's not been a lot of guys open. And last thing I would say that they tried in the Iowa game, but just they failed, was you could come back with a draw play. So if those linebackers reading pass or getting deep drops in zone, you can come back with a draw play and take advantage of that. And they tried it once. It wasn't executed well, and it wasn't clean blocking up front. And,
it was the world's longest delayed handoff on, I think it was like a third and eight. And, you know, it took far too long to develop. I think one of the tackles missed tackle, or else Roddy Smith would have been in the open. But, you know, to kind of go off on all the points that Derek just mentioned, the only one I really want to add is, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier, I believe already, was I have never seen as a grabby of a defensive back unit that Iowa was, and I was, you know, I shouldn't say flabbergasted because this game was in Iowa City, and it's not like you're if you're a Gopher football fan, you know, you're not expecting to get any calls down there anyway. I'm sure Derek could tell you about the lack of calls that Minnesota got during his playing career, but I just couldn't for the life of me figure out how Tyler Johnson couldn't get a single flag the entire game. Outside, I think he got one flag the entire game. That was in the first quarter. But, and I had to ask Derek about this to make sure that, you know, him being the elite football mind that he is, that there is still a rule, it's the same that it is in the NFL as it is in college football, that you can't have any contact, you know, with a receiver outside of that 5-yard box past the line of scrimmage. And if you were to go watch the GIF rewind on Gopher Illustrated, which, by the way, you know, that's probably, I know it's Luke's favorite piece every week, and I know it's quite a few others, you know, I know that it's a loss, so you don't want to go relive it, but go see why Minnesota didn't have success in certain situations. And I think I highlighted 5 or 6 times where Tyler Johnson is being either literally groped 10 yards down the field. I think there is even one play where Tyler Johnson is trying to run a post corner. He burns the corner so bad that the corner ends up dragging him to the ground. Kropp targets him, and there's no flag. And Fleck is losing his mind on the sidelines, and for good reason. And I couldn't explain it to any one of you why Minnesota couldn't get a single flag. Does Rashad still have to get off the line much cleaner and actually run a route? And, you know, instead of whatever the effort was he gave out there in terms of on the interception there, yes. But the defensive back was grabbing him clearly 5 yards past the line. And it was just mind-boggling that Minnesota couldn't get any help from the officiating crew. And then finally, before we transition to defense, I want to ask you about the Nate Wozniak play in the end zone, Derek. I can't explain it. It's 4th and 1. Hindsight's 20/20. Maybe you just give it to Brooks there. But that play works if Nate Wozniak just runs a route. And not once he gets, you know, if you go back and you watch the GIF, Gopher Illustrated, you know, he's blocky. He releases past the linebackers. Neither one of them are paying him any attention. And then he turns and starts backpedaling. And the ball is overthrown to the 6'10" tight end for the first time in his career. I think Nate Wozniak gets a red zone target, but he doesn't run the route. He just turns and backpedals. And if he just runs the route, that's a touchdown. So, you know, am I right in saying that, you know, that's what I saw in film anyway, but what did you think of the Wozniak red zone play?
Yeah, I thought, well, I like the play call, actually. I'm a fan of play action inside the 10-yard line, and I think it was a good play call. I would say there was probably thrown a little bit high regardless. There's probably a combination of those two things, but what you saw is right. When the tight end breaks off in the route, he doesn't want to wait too long to look back at the ball, because if he's open and he's expecting the ball to come, he doesn't want to be, have his back and not be able to make the catch. But the problem becomes exactly what you said. He turns around early, which slows him down, and he's not able to run through the route and catch the pass. So it's a natural thing. I know we talked about it just before we went on tonight. When you're as a defensive back or a receiver, the moment you turn, look for the ball, you naturally slow down. It's a skill you have to learn to be able to run full speed and be able to read the play. And so you can see that as soon as he breaks behind the defenders, he turns around, and that's where he starts backpedaling and slows down. And the pass is too long. I think it was a little bit high, but
he can at least make a much better attempt at being 6'10" with extremely long arms instead of just turning, backpedaling, and flailing and missing. Because again, the biggest thing for me in terms of Minnesota's offensive performance was they have two red zone trips in the first quarter. You get within, I believe, the 15-yard line both times and you get 0 points. That's unacceptable. I mean, you can't win at Iowa with two red zone trips and get 0 points. I mean, how much different of a game are we talking if Minnesota does convert on the Wozniak play there, or they just get a field goal on the still interception? We're talking about a completely different ball game. But Minnesota's red zone woes continue, and I mean, that's something they're going to have to fix in the upcoming weeks, Luke.
All right. So, I mean, hindsight, the loss is frustrating, because it's what now, the fourth loss in conference play. Again, it's another year that you can't win at Iowa City. But there are some positive things that did come out of this game, given the deficiencies that the defensive secondary has had. The Gophers held Iowa to only 17 points, and quite frankly, their defense kept them in that game, and that has to be kind of a highlight. I guess, Derek, what did you see out of this group this week in particular?
Well, I thought first and foremost, I thought it was a much, much better job defending outside zone. We talked about after the Michigan State game, that was the Achilles heel. Michigan ran it out of a toss outside zone. And the Gophers, I think, with first force for the ball, did okay. But those pursuit guys, the defensive backs at the run fits and the backside pursuit just wasn't there, and that really hurt them. I knew going into the game that the Iowa's had the same coaching staff forever, and they haven't, they adjust and tweak their schemes a little bit. Well, what they like to do is run outside zone, and they run it a little differently. They run a stretch play. But the concept is the same. In order to stop that, you need to force, maintain, contain, and force things back, and then you need to have great backside pursuit. And Gophers did a really nice job of that. I thought Jonathan Celestine had a much better game. I think Ryan, you said he's playing through an injury, and I think he's been down a bit in the last.
He's got a right elbow injury he's trying to play through.
Yeah, I thought he did much better in the Iowa game. And all around inside the box, those guys did well against that. If you don't defend that outside stretch play well, that's just going to eat you alive as the game goes on. And I know they get hit by it a few times, but that's what stuck out to me in this game. And I think that's what let them stay in the game is the fact that they were able to, for the most part, contain Iowa's zone running.
Well, if you take out the first two halves or the first half of each, the first drive of each one of the halves, where to start the game, Iowa makes it look far too easy, goes 5 plays for 80 yards and a touchdown. Then to start the second half, they go 5 plays, 67 yards for a touchdown. Minnesota's defense played about as well as you can at Iowa City. And it's very frustrating for me to say that, because, again, this is a defense that played well enough to win, yet their offense doesn't bail them out. And that's kind of been a theme here throughout Big Ten play. And when you go back and you watch, guys that are continuing to make splash plays, guys like Thomas Barber, you see Jacob Huff continue to be opportunistic, catches one off the face mask of an Iowa wide receiver. Ken Handy-Holly makes the heads-up play as a true freshman that has the piles moving. the whistle hasn't been blown dead yet. So let me skip my right arm in on the ball and let's strip it out. And that's, you know, that saved points at least because that play was right on the Minnesota 20-yard line and I was driving there late in the half. Minnesota's defense over their last four Big Ten games now has forced 12 turnovers. That's absolutely sensational for this defense. The issue is on those 12 turnovers, Minnesota's offense has only been able to create 34 points, and that's terrible. You're not even averaging a field goal per, you know, per turnover where you're going to get the ball more times than not near midfield or in the enemy territory. So again, the defense continues to play well, especially with how banged up their secondary core is. We got word just before the game that Minnesota's top three corners were out. So no Keandre Thomas, no Antonio Chenault, and Zoe Creighton obviously remains out with a torn ACL. No Antoine Winfield yet. So you're without four of your five starting defensive backs from game one. You're starting Justice Harris as a true freshman in his first collegiate action. And, I mean, we'll get to him, but I mean, he severely struggled at times, as you'd expect a true freshman to do. I think Kunle Ayinde is Minnesota's third string safety. Played exceptionally well for, you know, I think, the second game in a row for the most part at his corner position. And, you know, Duke McGee, after a struggling opening drive for him, I thought that he did a good job, Derek, of setting the edge. I think there's a play specifically where he's lined up basically across from the tight end and try to run a running play to his side. He gets upfield, gets his inside shoulder on the fullback's chest, sets the edge. Running back tries to go outside of him still, and he gets a tackle for loss. Again, that's exactly how you want to play that if you're a Minnesota secondary trying to help out the run fit. So you're seeing a Minnesota defense continue to play well, but, I mean, they're not getting any love from their offense. Again, I mentioned it. They've forced 12 turnovers in the last 3 weeks, or the last 4 weeks, so three on average a game, yet Minnesota's only got 34 points off those turnovers to show for it. So, Derek, what did you think in terms of Minnesota's secondary continue to improve against that run fit? Because you look on the day for Iowa, 33 carries for 3.8 yards per carry. Now, this is a Minnesota team that had been significantly struggling with the running game. I mean, you look at a team like Michigan State compared to Iowa, you know, you'd think they're probably pretty similar. But what did you think of Minnesota's effort against the run?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at if you go back and look at, you know, Ryan's GIF rewind, or if you go back and watch the game or want to see some clips from it, just watch the backside pursuit. So if Iowa runs outside zone to the right, watch the players on the weak side, backside linebacker, safety, middle linebacker, watch them pursue. And you know that they've been coached up since the Michigan State game. And it was a point of emphasis for them because you could see those guys just really get on their horse and get to the ball. That's the key. You just never know exactly who's going to have to make the tackle on those outside zone plays. So you have to get three and four and five guys in pursuit in order to stop it. And as we talked about, they did a good job of that. The other thing I wanted to mention was you talked a little bit about the secondary, and I know they had a couple of busts, and you know, Iowa was able to connect on a few plays, but I have to give credit to the Iowa quarterback. As well as Minnesota played, if we want to play the what-if game, they played really well, but they also played really well, I thought, in pass defense, and Iowa's quarterback was able to get them out of some bad situations and kind of rescue a few plays. Without that, I would even say we're talking about maybe even a 10 or a 14-point defensive effort, because yeah, that quarterback really did well to get them out of some of those, you know, third and 10, second and long, really nothing there, and he kind of scrambles around and is able to find some guy. And to credit to him, I don't think it was necessarily a breakdown, but boy, if he's not able to step up and have a decent game just on his shoulders, then we're really talking about a very dominating performance.
And the frustrating part about, you know, I don't mean to point it out to kind of put salt in the wound, especially, you know, what I talked about to start the podcast, but Nathan Stanley, the Iowa quarterback, is only a sophomore, and he's from Menominee, Wisconsin. So if you look at the three big, you know, the three closest Big Ten institutions he's closest to, it's clearly Minnesota. Tracy Clays never gave him a second thought. Iowa offered him early on, and Wisconsin tried to come in late, and they weren't able to do so. But, I mean, you'd have to think if Kirk Ciarrocca was here and PJ Fleck was here, Nathan Stanley would be exactly the type of quarterback they'd want here. So for Minnesota to not even recruit a guy like that when You know, he's now at Iowa making plays and helping them win ball games. It's probably pretty frustrating. But I also do want to kind of touch on Justice Harris a little bit. Again, I don't want to be extremely negative, but it was clear, Derek, that, you know, Iowa figured out who Justice Harris was guarding, and they were going to go at him early and often. You saw in the long touchdown to Noah Fant, the 45-yard connection where Minnesota's in man coverage. It was cover one, so one deep high safety. And Duke McGee, the receiver at the bottom of the screen, runs a crossing route. Kunle Ayende is matched up with him. He takes off, and he takes Duke McGee out of the play, and coming back open underneath is Noah Fant with Justice Harris in coverage. Now, Justice Harris makes the mistake as a true freshman to peek in at the quarterback to see where he's going to throw the ball to try and make a play. When he does that, he loses sight of Noah Fant. Noah Fant adjusts his route further upfield. He cannot recover. And then it looks like Justice Harris is kind of running in quicksand towards the end there as he's not able to catch up to Noah Fant. But what did you think in terms of Iowa being able to exploit at times Minnesota's depleted secondary?
Well, yeah, their lack of experience showed. I know that the cliche is, you know, when guys play for a while, they talk about the game slowing down for them. You can see with some of these real young defensive backs, the game has not slowed down for them. I mean, they're not able to, as we talked about, they're not able to make their reads, run at full speed, or have developed that recovery speed. You know, you look at some of the top flight cornerbacks in college and the NFL, they can get beat early in a route, but they have the recovery speed to come back and close. And they just haven't developed that. So you can see Iowa trying to take advantage of that. They were able to connect on a few of those, and you know, it was the lack of experience and kind of the youth showing through that the game hasn't slowed down yet for those guys. They're not able to make those reads and adjust and keep up with those guys playing and play out.
And the final thing I really want to touch on before I think Luke wants to talk a little bit of special teams.
Always want to talk special teams. Always.
I know. So before we get to that, I mean, I do want to continue to highlight guys like Carter Coughlin, who continue to get pressure. You know, he almost had two sacks, but Nathan Stanley is able to recover from that. I saw that Rob, and I just want to give some credit to Rob Smith, because again, I mean, you saw him show double A gap blitzes, and then, you know, kind of bounce back into coverage, confuse the linemen. Again, that's the entire point of that, is if you have six at the line, plus you have, you know, so you have your four linemen, then you have two linebackers in the A-gap. You have the entire offensive line thinking. And as Derek will probably tell you, a thinking lineman isn't necessarily a great lineman, because he's probably going to be slow trying to think of where this guy's going to come from. And Minnesota gets creative. They're able to get some pressure on Nathan Stanley at times. I know they didn't get any home for any sacks, but I think guys like Thomas Barber, I thought, you know, Steven Richardson played well, even though most of Gopher fans think that he hasn't been playing well. Just because he hasn't been able to get home doesn't mean that he's not getting consistent penetration at times. But, you know, for as well, I think this, again, I just want it to be known, Derek, that, you know, I don't know if you agree with it necessarily, but, you know, for as depleted as the secondary is, and we talk about it, you know, four of the top five defensive backs from the first game of the season were out against Iowa. And, you know, for such a depleted secondary, only giving up 17 points at, you know, on the road at Iowa, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think just to point out, you know, kind of how that affects everything, real quickly, you mentioned the pass rush. I think they're getting, little by little, they're getting slightly more aggressive with some of their pass rushes, and I think they were able to get some hurries and force some pressure in this game. You talked about the double A gap look and things like that. Just to give you an example of, you know, the Blake Cashman we've seen in years past, when you have some lockdown cornerbacks that you're able to put on island, you can blitz him every play. I mean, every passing situation.
You saw Minnesota do that in 2016, yep. But I think you're about to, I don't mean to steal your thunder, but the lack of talent in the secondary right now means that Blake Cashman hasn't been as effective. But again, I don't want to steal your thunder here.
No, that's where I was going. And you saw, like, in the Iowa game, they're slowly adding that in and taking a few of those chances, and you could see him get more pressure and kind of let those guys loose and get more of a pass rush. We talked at the beginning of the year, we were saying, well, where's the pass rush? Well, they're not putting any pressure on because they don't have the confidence in the corners on the outside. When you have a an Eric Murray, a Brian Bobby Calhoun, a Demaryius Travis, you have all the confidence in the world to leave those guys on an island against anybody, and you can rush six or seven, or you can, you know, game things up front. And so that's how much that affects every facet of the defense. And I think they're slowly but surely adding some of that back. And I think Blake was able to get a pressure and force a check down. I think it was on third and long, and they weren't able to pick it up. And so those are the dimensions you want to develop. But it takes confidence in your secondary and experience out of your secondary to be able to open those things up.
All right. Everybody's favorite part of the show, special teams. You know,
it's at least your favorite part, so I guess that counts as one, right?
Yeah, I guess this is just for me. Everybody can basically tune out at this point. You know, Ryan, we talked about in the preview how actually very strong the return games were for Iowa. And, you know, you look at the average return for kick returns is only 23 yards. More impressive they were on punt returns, where Matt Vandenberg was averaging somewhere around like 9 or 10 yards a return. He was held to only 2.3 yards a return on four returns. So, you know, actually a pretty solid job for the most part by the coverage teams that really have kind of struggled at times this year for the Gophers.
Excuse me. Yeah, I agree. You know, there's still, I think, a long way to go with the special teams unit in terms of, you haven't seen a whole lot from the punt return game. You haven't seen a whole lot from the kick return game.
I kind of want to interrupt you there, just because what do you think about Drew Himleski? I know we touched on this a little bit before, but
I'd rather him be the full-time punt returner
same.
Right now for the rest of the season. Now, yeah. I understand he's back there just because Chenault hasn't, you know, has been out with injury. But you look at, on the year, Antonio Chenault has 10 fair catches, his four returns for 2.8. Yards of return. Now, Drew in only two games has four returns for 6 yards of return, but I mean, Minnesota's been essentially getting nothing all season from their punt returners. So why not just let Drew Himleski, you know, be more aggressive on these punt returners and try to get Minnesota better field position? Because, you know, and again, maybe it's just me being biased at this point, but I'm tired of seeing Minnesota let the ball hit the ground and then have it roll 15 yards, you know, in Minnesota's not in their direction. So, I mean, Derek, I mean, again, you're an elite football mind. You know, is my punt returner take off in terms of I think Minnesota needs to start being more aggressive with their punt returners, especially with as athletic a guy Drew Himleski is. I mean, is it just kind of nitpicking at this point, or do you have any thoughts on the punt return game?
Well, it was difficult for him. I think it was maybe the second game he's fielded punts, and they threw they brought out a rugby style low line drive kick and roll punter. It's difficult, and you're gambling a bit when you where you'd like to be. I think to complete your point, where you'd like to be is have the confidence and the experience with a guy back there who's able to pick those up. So get those rolls, just step in front of it. Pick it up, even if it means you pick it up and fall on it, you're saving the 15 yards of roll. He was a little bit nervous, I think, being that it was, you know, his second game, to try and pick some of those up, because the risk you take is you try to step in front of one of those low liners that's bouncing down the field. It bounces off your shoulder pad, and now it's a live ball the defense can take. But I'm with you. I am a proponent of not letting balls, the punts hit the ground at all, if at all possible, and trying
just,
to, what do you have to lose?
Your punt returner 10 to 15
yep.
yards, you know the yep. wind, know where you're going, and just move him up a bit and let him either get a chance to actually field the ball and then make a decision if he wants to fair catch it or not. But I'm just tired of seeing balls bounce, you know, and Minnesota's yep. punt returner is letting him go. And the ball bouncing an extra 15 yards, so Minnesota's offense has another 15 yards to get into even scoring position. But you know, that's something I'd love to I'd love to see in the final five games of the season.
Yeah, and then I guess on the kicking front, you know, Emmett Carpenter, not a lot of opportunities in terms of the field goal game, but he was. He was good from 33 and knocked home the extra point. I don't know. Santoso, on the other hand, you know,
no punts inside the 20 is concerning to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it wasn't his best effort.
There, but I don't think it really mattered when you looked at in terms of the average Iowa field position. I mean, it was about even with Minnesota's. But I mean, you'd like to see a better effort there from the senior. So, I mean, Luke, do you have any final thoughts? Derek, do you have any final thoughts?
So I have one final thought. I think in a game like this, you know, not to harp on special teams over and over again, this is one of those games where, you know, special teams can really make the difference in a low scoring game. And they didn't necessarily give it to them. They didn't kill them, but it also, they didn't get it. And at this point, you know, it would be nice to see that unit, whether it be a kick return or a punt return or something. There hasn't been a lot in the last year. Well, I guess last year Rodney Smith had a long return, but you know, it would be nice to see some action there. Especially when, you know, at this point your offense is somewhat, you know, for lack of a better term, anemic.
Derek, any thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I would like to see, just touch on it briefly. I think, Luke, this is part of your point. The kick return game has kind of, in my opinion, regressed a bit. I think earlier in the year, they were having a little bit more success. The teams are doing now is they're kicking the ball inside what's called the box. So within like the 5-yard line inside the hash. They're typically doing that to the receiving team's right, and they're pinning them in the corner. And I'd like to see them come away with a couple of variations. They're just trying to take that upfield, and they're consistently getting tackled inside the 20. Now, easier said than done. I understand it's easy to draw it up and expect it to work, but I'd at least like to see them attempt a few wrinkles on that. You know, you can try and take one of those and pull it outside and try and get around the end. There's a couple other variations you can run, but seems to be that they're, you know, kind of content taking that right up the sideline, and it's just they're not able to block everybody who's pinned to that side. So the kick return game, I'd like to see them, you know, take a couple risks and see if they can't come up with something.
I guess my final question to both of you, I mean, we kind of look ahead to the Little Brown Jug Week here as Minnesota travels to Ann Arbor, a Michigan team that has had a very interesting October. They lose at home in a close one to Michigan State. Then they travel on the road to Indiana, win in overtime. Then they get absolutely drummed by Penn State on the road. And then they get a get right spot at home last week against a bad Rutgers team. But I'm not really expecting a whole lot in terms of a chance for Minnesota in this game. I know that Minnesota won in 2015 and they should have won last year at home. But again, looking at this Michigan defense, Derek, and looking at how anemic this Minnesota offense has been their last two games, especially passing the ball, I mean, I know that there's a reason why they play the games, but when you look at this matchup coming up against Michigan, what are your initial thoughts?
Well, they're going to need help. So it's one of those games that you talk about, you know, the three different phases. In you know, one or more of those phases, they're going to need help with a turnover, a big play out of special teams, or some explosive gains, maybe a trick play or two on offense. I don't think they can, you know, it's not set up for them to line up man for man and be able to win through attrition or, you know, sort of limit things, you know, try and limit things and just play out their game. And they're going to need some help. They're going to need some turnovers on defense or, like I said, a big play, a couple big plays in special teams, maybe that's a mistake, a bobbled snap on a punt, something for Michigan, something like that. So, and you know, like you said, that's why we play the game. You just never know. But Michigan, unfortunately, maybe for the Gophers, seems to maybe have found their quarterback or at least somebody that they're happy with. But maybe this is another case where a guy comes in the game as a backup, does really well, and now in his first start, things sort of reset and he's got to relearn things. So it'll be interesting to see how they – you know, I believe they're going to bring out the new guy at quarterback, how he responds, but they're going to need some help through turnovers or explosive gains some way.
All right. Well, Derek, thanks again for joining. We'll come back with a preview for this Michigan game coming up later in the week. So look for that in your podcasting app. I want to thank everybody for listening. Again, check out Ryan's work on gopherillustrated.com. It's arguably the best content generation around Gopher sports that you can find on the internet. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.